Good afternoon. I'd like to call House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. It is 1:38 p.m. We are meeting in the Max Grinberg Committee Room 120 in the Capitol Building here in Juneau. I ask that you please silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us today is Talia with the Juneau LAO and Sophia with House Records. The following members present is Representative Johnson, Representative Gray, Representative Carpenter, Representative Groh, Representative Sumner, Vice Chair Allard, and myself, Chair Vance, and we have a quorum to conduct business. We have two items on today's calendar, and that is to hear H.J.R. 13, the Federal Constitutional Convention term limits in its second hearing, and then bring back House Bill 107, Criminal Law Definitions, Person and Life in its third hearing. The first item on our agenda, H.J.R. 13 by Representative McKay in its second hearing. I will first open up public testimony on H.J.R. 13. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify in H.J.R. 13? Seeing none, I will now go to online. And we have Susan Almaroth, if you could please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
My name is Susan Almaroth. I'm from the Two Rivers area, and I'm representing myself. I stand strongly opposed. There are absolutely no rules for an Article 5 convention outlined in the Constitution. This means a group of people convening to rewrite our Constitution would be totally unelected and unaccountable. There's nothing that would limit the convention to a single issue, so the delegates could write the amendments that revoke any of our most cherished rights, like our rights to peaceful protest, our freedom of religion, or our right to privacy. There are no rules preventing corporations from pouring money into the convention to ensure they get their way. In short, an Article 5 convention would be a disaster. It could be too long and costly legal battles, uncertain about how our democracy functions, and likely economic instabilities.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Almaroth. Next, we have Judy Caller from Nevada City, California. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
I'm Judy Kaler, testifying for myself. The U.S. term lobbyist said that the good news is that we are never having a convention for term limits or anything. When states get pressure from Congress, Congress acts. That is our history. Let's look at real history. You were told that it was the 29 applications that pushed Congress into proposing the 17th Amendment, but that turned out badly. If we still had the 17th Amendment, the state would be able to fire their corrupt senators and replace them, and you wouldn't need term limits on them. This is an example of how the Article 5 convention process was used as justification for Congress to adopt something they wanted to get out of from under the thumb of state legislatures. You were told the Bill of Rights became law because of the Article 5 effort. Not true. The one or two applications passed nothing to do with it. It was pursuant to the promises made to the states in order to induce them to ratify the new Constitution. James Madison introduced the Bill of Rights into Congress, which was ratified 2 years later. There were only 5 applications on presidential term limits. After 4 terms of FDR, everyone wanted presidential term limits. 5 applications had nothing to do with it. Similarly with the women's right to vote. I found no applications on that, probably because the U.S. Constitution never prohibited women from voting. Some state constitutions did, and it was the suffragettes that got Congress to propose the 19th Amendment. The balanced budget amendment got up to 32 applications. If that wasn't enough for Congress to pass an amendment they don't like, nothing will be. I see no evidence in our history that filing applications for conventions anything to do with getting Congress to propose amendments. But telling you that you need to pass applications, ask Congress for something, betting it will never happen, is a clever way of having state pass applications that they wouldn't otherwise pass and triggering a convention that can't be limited. Don't fall for it. Playing chicken with Congress isn't a good bet, and you're betting our Constitution. thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. It appears that there is no other testimony in the room, so I will now close public testimony on HJR 13. For those watching online who did not have an opportunity to testify, you can submit your written testimony to house.judiciary@akleg.gov, and it will be submitted to the public record. The committee received no amendments for this resolution. Does the sponsor wish to make any final remarks? Please state your name for the record.
For the record, as Laura does, staff to Representative McKay. So HGR 13 would set federal term limits on members of Congress. Under Article 5, which would call for a convention of the states. We have 84% of Alaskan voters that are in favor of congressional term limits, and we hope that Alaska can be the seventh state to join the call.
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Chair McKay. I'd just like to say that Chair McKay isn't present here today because he's chairing House Resources.
Thank you for that. Any further questions from committee members? Vice Chair Allard.
So we heard thank you, and through the chair, we heard some, gotten a flurry of emails in regards to where this can go and how it can open up. Can you kind of hit on why they're saying that and what that specifically means?
Representative Allard, through the chair, there's been a lot of worries about what might happen if a constitutional convention ever occurred. It'd be a huge judicial headache. But the point of this resolution, the point of all these resolutions, is not to actually have the constitutional convention. You get close and Congress does what you're calling them to do. That's been the history of calling for constitutional conventions. We have never had one in the history of the U.S. So the Article 5 statute was put in there simply so you could force Congress to do things they won't do with the, I don't want to say threat, but with the possibility of having this constitutional convention for amendments.
Follow up?
Thank you for putting that on public record and for the clarification.
Any further questions? Representative Gray.
Thank you, through the chair. Just leaping off of what Vice Chair Allard said. So one of the testimonies had the concern that the Constitutional Convention wouldn't be about a specific amendment. And so I just wanted to confirm that it's not possible to call an Article 5 convention about just one thing. Once that convention happens, it could be about lots of things. Is that correct?
For the record, as Laura does, staff to Representative McKay. So Article 5 is specifically just propose amendments to a constitution. The state would be able to choose their delegates. We would also have oversight from the state legislature, from Supreme Court, if there was ever any kind of action in the convention that was unethical.
Follow up?
Through the chair, do you know how Alaska would choose its delegates?
We don't know. So that is up to the state legislature to decide how they would choose the delegates. So they would be the ones to set the process.
Follow up.
Would we need to do a bill?
Representative Gray, through the chair, like I stated previously, we've never had a constitutional convention. So a lot of this process is gray area that would need to be figured out down the road if we ever reach that very high threshold, 34 states to go to the constitutional convention.
I need follow up.
Follow up.
Through the chair. But to go back to your original point, the goal isn't necessarily to have the Constitutional Convention. It's to pressure the U.S. Congress to act.
Representative Gray, through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Sumner.
Through the chair, to staff for Representative McKay, how many states have passed this to date?
Through the chair, Representative Sumner, there's been 6 states.
Any further questions? Thank you. Do we have any final wrap-up comments from members before we consider motion? Hearing none. Vice Chair Allard.
Madam Chair, I move that the House Judiciary Committee move HJR 13, version 33-LS0690/B from committee with the attached fiscal note C.
Hearing no objection, we will take a brief at ease to sign the committee report as HJR 13 has passed from committee. Our second and final item on agenda today, we will bring back House Bill 107, Criminal Law Definitions, Person and Life by Representative McCabe in its third hearing. There is a proposed committee substitute to present before the committee today. Vice Chair Allard, may I have a motion? Brief at ease.
I move the committee adopt proposed CS for HB 107 version 33 LS0482/U as in uniform as a committee's new working document.
Object.
There's been an objection. I will now ask Representative McCabe and his staff to come to the table and walk us through this proposed committee substitute. It has been submit at their will, so please put your name on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kevin McCabe, representative for District 30, House District 30. With me is my staff, Julie Morris, who will run you through the CS changes and sectional if you need it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Julie Morris, staff to Representative McCabe. I would like to do the summary of changes from version B to version U. There was a title change. Version U includes the definition of person in the Alaska statute and provides for an effective date. Section 1 is a new section amending AS 0110060A8 to include or a human entity that has the moral right of self-determination. A person does not include an environmental element, artificial intelligence, animal, or inanimate object. In Section 2, page 1, line 11 and 12, amends AS 1181-900B47, or a human entity that has the moral right of self-determination. Line 13 and 14 includes new language, person, does not include an environmental element, artificial intelligence, animal, or inanimate object. Section 3, page 2, line 3, the word human is added. Section 4, no changes. And in Section 5, provides for an effective date of July 1, 2024.
Thank you for that. Representative Sumner.
Thank you. Through the chair to the bill sponsor, Could you maybe explain what the difference between a natural person and a human entity is? I guess I'm a little... Wouldn't a natural person be a human entity? Or what is the difference there?
Virtually the same thing. Through the chair, sorry, Representative McKay. Virtually the same thing. It's just the different language that the different bill drafters put in there.
Follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Sumner, to... bill sponsor. So we are defining person in the criminal statutes here. I have a little bit of a concern that not too far down the road, there could be fully autonomous artificial intelligence programs that may not be held to account in any way. Do you think it would maybe be advisable to perhaps give sufficiently advanced artificial intelligence programs personhood under this so that they could be held criminally liable if they fully autonomously killed people or something of the sort?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe. Representative Sumner, I don't think we're quite there yet, although AI is moving pretty fast, really fast, probably faster than we want, which is why we put the language for the AI specifically in there at the suggestion of several people, frankly. So it seemed to be a good spot to do it. Is it going to need further clarification? Most definitely, probably pretty quick.
Follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative McKay, I have seen Terminator and a number of other movies, and I don't believe we are too far from that. And I wonder if that would be a hostile amendment or possibly, or what would be your take on that amendment? Thank you.
Thanks. Through the chair, it's Representative McCabe.
Oh, sorry.
And I'm open to any of that kind of stuff. We watched the robo dog in here yesterday, and on the very back of it by its tail, it's got a big red button. And they also said that it's programmed with the three you know, I don't know what they are, three robotic programs that you can never harm a human and those sort of things. So if you can figure out a way to draft amendment for that, I'm happy to consider it.
Vice Chair Allen.
Yeah, thank you, and through the chair. Thank you, Representative McKay, for being here today and your staff, Julie. I have a few questions because not too long ago, I asked legal on the phone, and I think it was in regards to yours, about if there was a woman who was pregnant and she was 10 days along, she technically could be pregnant. She could be taking the test in 7 to 10 days. And if she told her husband or her spouse or whoever that she was pregnant and that individual is then murdered, the person in the state of Alaska could be prosecuted for her murder along with the baby. And so my question is, if that's already in statute, and this is why I'm asking legal, just wondering what this is doing to help, or I'm not understanding what this is for. But if you can, am I making sense to you about, I feel like we already have it, but I want to just for you to clarify before we get legal on the phone.
Thanks, through the chair, Representative Allard, it's Representative McCabe. So yes, it's this is further clarifying and defining life itself, because there is no definition in the criminal statutes of life. I think it was Assistant Attorney General Skidmore that answered that question last time, that they would absolutely look to see if they could charge if there is a woman that's murdered, and I think the medical examiners, as a matter of course, check for pregnancy to see if she is pregnant, and if she is, then they could charge that person with a double homicide. So I suspect that the fact that life is not in statute is the definition of life is not in statute is an oversight, frankly, and I'm trying to correct that.
We are seeing if Assistant Attorney General Skidmore is available, and Ms. Radford, the drafter from Legislative Legal Services, is available online. So, wow, she popped up at that moment. So Ms. Radford is available. Vice Chair Allard.
Ms. Bradford?
Yes.
Ms. Bradford, this is Representative Allard. Can you hear me okay?
Through the chair, yes, I can.
Thank you. So I just had a little, through the chair, I just had a little bit of confusion because I know that Assistant Attorney General Skidmore had spoken to us about that if a woman was pregnant and that she was murdered and we knew that she was pregnant, that the individual who caused her murder could be tried for two deaths instead of just one. And I was trying to figure out, I think it was 14.01 in the Alaska statute, not really sure. And I'm just trying to figure out how this could further codify House Bill 107, just to make sure that that definition is there and that we could feel reassured that this will be a good thing.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, for the record, this is Claire Radford with Legislative Legal Services. Currently in Alaska law, 1141.150 through 1141.170 would cover the murder, manslaughter, or criminally negligent homicide of an unborn child. Murder is separately codified under 1141.100 through 1141.140. House Bill 107 is not changing the definition of person in 1141.140. Which applies specifically to murder in the first degree, second degree, manslaughter, and criminally negligent homicide. So House Bill 107 wouldn't impact the current charging structure of homicide or murder of an unborn child.
Follow up?
Yes. So with HB 107, we are defining life, and this will be more helpful as far as being able to prosecute. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I think that would be a better question for Department of Law. I'm not sure that this definition of life specifically would help or hinder the current prosecution under Alaska statute.
Follow up?
No. Just want to know if we can get Department of Law.
We are waiting it to see if Mr. Skidmore is available. But do while we have Ms. Radford online, Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair to Ms. Radford. The statutes that you were just talking about that this bill doesn't apply to, when in that particular, in AS statute 1141.140, and it says the definition 1141.100 to 1141.140, it says a person is, quote, alive if there is spontaneous respiratory or cardiac function, or when respiratory and cardiac functions are maintained by artificial means, there is spontaneous brain function. Is that considered a definition of life?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, I'm not sure that this would go so far as to be the definition of life. This would be the definition for alive within the definition of person under 1141.140. And that definition says that when referring to the victim of a crime, a person is a human being who has been born and was alive at the time of the criminal act.
Follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair, and maybe it's because I'm not a lawyer, but I don't understand how you can be alive and not have life. Can you explain how to be alive and not have life, Ms. Radford?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, I think that a person who is alive does have life, but the term alive is what's being used, and I think that is the distinction here.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you. And I'm not really sure if this is for Ms. Radford or not, and through the chair or through the sponsor. Okay, let me get my thoughts for on this one. So if a woman is pregnant and is killed, but the baby survives, and although the baby is maybe 6 months or 7 months old, what does that do in this with this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, if a woman is murdered but the child she was carrying survives, there would only be one prosecutable offense for homicide.
Follow up?
Yeah, I'm just curious. Thank you. And through the chair, I'm just curious because I want to make, and I know, okay, I'm just trying to figure out, like, if the baby is delivered after the woman is deceased, I guess that child would be still considered a victim. Okay, I don't know. All right, we'll just have to wait for Department of Law some other time. Okay.
Thanks. Any further questions for Ms. Radford? Not at this time. Any further questions for regarding this committee substitute? Representative Gray.
Thanks. Through the chair, I'm going to maintain my objection. Can I just state why?
Before you do that, do we have Representative Gray have questions?
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative McCabe, through the chair, you testified earlier in a previous hearing the intent was not to have, I think you said, stormtroopers going to doctor's offices with this proposed legislation. But do you believe that this legislation will have no effect on litigation over abortion in Alaska?
Thanks. So through the chair, Representative Groh, that's not for me to say. I'm simply saying that the Alaska legislature is defining life in this means. So litigation involves lawyers and courts and judges, and I am none of those. So I'm definitely not an expert on that. I do I believe it? I don't know. Do I hope so? Absolutely.
Follow up. What is it you hope so?
Well, I hope through the chair, Representative McCabe, I hope that this gives the courts a path forward should they need it to define what life is, to, you know, if that's the desire of the courts and of the state and whoever brings the lawsuit to define abortion as illegal in the state of Alaska. Absolutely.
Okay. Follow up. Representative McCabe, has the state engaged in litigation over abortion before?
Through the chair, as far as I know, it was even pre Roe versus Wade, where the courts erroneously, in many people's opinion, leaned on the definition of privacy in our Constitution as saying that abortion was illegal.
Follow up. One estimate that I've read is that the state has spent since 2001 an estimated $4.2 million losing lawsuits related to abortion. Do you think that the passage of the statute would tip the scales and make it more likely to win lawsuits against abortion?
Through the chair, Representative Groh, absolutely. I hope so. I hope it will save the state money in that respect, and I hope it will also save the state money and the children that we have allowed to be aborted in our state that could have been part of the workforce today, could have been part of our universities, could have been part of our first responders, could have been part of our law enforcement. Yeah, I think that the savings, and in fact the savings to the state and the ability of the state to profit from this, if that's what you want to define it down to, if you want to bring it down to that level, I think is incalculable.
Thank you.
Any further questions from the bill sponsor? Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, just as it's been a long time since we heard the bill, I recall that when we last heard the bill, the question about what is the purpose of the bill, and I just want to make sure that I remember it correctly, that it is to define in statute what life is. It is not to add any additional crimes or civil penalties to anything. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, absolutely. This bill makes no mention of health. It makes no mention of doctors, no mention of women, no mention of abortion. It simply defines life and what a person is.
Representative Sumner.
Thank you. Through the chair to the bill sponsor, should we perhaps define human as well? And I ask that because there's certain human-derived cell lines, I think like HeLa cells, that are used extensively in medical research that may qualify under your definition of life, self-perpetuating and adapting, and debatably human. But I would wonder if perhaps we should dial down the definition of human as well. I'm just not necessarily as an amendment. I just would wonder what the sponsor would say.
Through the chair, Representative Sumner, you knew exactly where I was going. I'm happy to entertain an amendment from you. Knowing your background in college, I suspect you probably know more about it than I do. So I'm happy to entertain an amendment in that respect.
Vice Chair Ellen.
I was going to do that. I was going to look at perhaps offering an amendment. So I think when we have an amendment deadline, are we at that point? Or are we going to have to do a conceptual?
We will set an amendment deadline today. Okay. Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Chair Vance. So I do have a little bit of a wrap up. If you could, it will answer some of the questions, some of Representative Gray's questions. So, life is defined as a condition that distinguishes animals and plants from inorganic matter. We know that life includes the capacity for growth, reproduction, functional activity, and continual change. Consider, if you will, that there is no such thing as dark. You can't flip a switch and have dark. Instead, we flip a switch and light comes on and darkness goes away. Dark is merely the absence of light. Much like dark, death is defined in many dictionaries as well as the Bible, not as its own condition, but as the absence of life, life being the underlying condition. So a fetus who dies in the womb via a miscarriage or other means would have to have been recognized to be alive or a living person or human being before it can actually die in the womb. Again, the defining or base condition is life. Dr. Horatio R. Storer said in his book, Criminal Abortion, allowing then, as must be done, that the ovum does not originate in the uterus, that for a time, however slight during its passage through the fallopian tube, its connection with the mother is wholly broken, that its subsequent history after impregnation is one merely of development, its attachment merely for nutrition and shelter. It is not rational to suppose that its total independence, thus once established, becomes again merged into total identity, however temporary. The logic of Dr. Storr's conclusion is irrefutable. The life of the unborn human being begins independent of the mother's body. If we follow the science, as we have been told incessantly to do so in the last several years, it is illogical then to conclude that the life of the preborn human being, which was previously independent of the mother, ceases to exist during the time that he or she is in the womb. In other words, the egg and the sperm, which are now combined and subdividing, are an independent life and do not terminate just because they have attached to the mother for nurturing and support. Other scientists, such as Keith Moore, writing in the book Clinically Oriented Embryology, the sixth edition, says, the zygote results from the union of an oocyte and sperm. A zygote is the beginning of a new human being. Human development begins at fertilization, the process during which the male gamete, or sperm, unites with a female gamete, or oocyte, to form a single cell called a zygote. This highly specialized totipotent cell marks the beginning of each of us as a unique individual. Again, when a male sperm meets a female egg, both cease to exist independently and are combined as a living human being in the earliest stage of development, which is conception. Every major textbook on the subject used in medical schools teaches this exact thing. This new life has a separate DNA and is completely and totally separate from the mother. Furthermore, the independent life of the preborn child is again proven by the fact that it is the preborn child who initiates implantation into the womb. Dr. Adam Shelf, writing in The Growth of the Placenta, American Gynecology, said, the mother's body is entirely passive in the implantation process. It merely responds to the actions taken by the unborn human being. Finally, our scientific and medical implantation of preborn and subsequent birth of children who developed outside their biological mother's womb legitimizes the claim that the preborn are an independent life. If being pregnant was only a function of the woman's reproductive organs, then implanting, carrying to term, and successful birth would be impossible outside of the womb. The mere fact that we can do this, even in surrogates, demonstrates that the preborn child is not just a product of the woman's reproductive system, but is, in fact, an independent living human being. The Alaska Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, says, this Constitution is dedicated to the principles that all persons have a natural right to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and the enjoyment of rewards of their own industry, that all persons are equal and entitled to equal rights, opportunities, and protections under the law, and that all persons have corresponding obligations to the people and to the state. Every person's right to life must be protected by the state, regardless of age, level of dependency, citizenship, or even viability. This right is a natural right granted by the Creator and unable to be alienated by the laws of the state. If this right is to be protected for all persons within the state of Alaska, then this protection cannot be denied to any person or human being for any reason, not even the preborn. Thus, it is unlawful for a state to have a viability test to determine whether a person's right to life is worthy of production. According to the Alaska Constitution, every human being's right to life is to be protected without exception. In United States versus Cruikshank, the justices wrote, the rights of life and personal liberty are natural rights of man. To secure these rights, says the Declaration of Independence, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. The very highest duty of the states when they entered into the Union under the Constitution was to protect all persons within their boundaries in the enjoyment of these unalienable rights with which they were endowed by their Creator. Sovereignty for this purpose rests alone with the states. In a 2007 Supreme Court case known as Gonzalez versus Carhart, SCOTUS opined that the unborn child is a living individual separate and distinct from his or her mother, a preborn individual human being, if you will. In this decision, the court did not consider the preborn child to be merely a part of the mother's body. In another case known as Bonbress versus Cotts, which was heard in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, Justice McGuire stated, from the viewpoint of the civil law and the law of property, a child in ventre sumir, which means in the mother's womb, is not only regarded as a human being, but as such from the moment of conception, which it is in fact. In a Supreme Court case known as Marbury versus Madison, the Supremes wrote, The very essence of civil liberty certainly consists in the right of every individual to claim the protection of the laws whenever he receives an injury. The government of the United States has been emphatically termed a government of laws and not of men. It will certainly cease to deserve this high appellation if the laws furnish no remedy for the violation of a vested legal right. That decision cemented the individuality of the preborn child and guarantees him or her a civil right to claim the protection of the law. This would include the right to privacy found in the Alaska Constitution. In another SCOTUS case known as Reed versus Reed, the justices wrote, "The Equal Protection Clause of that amendment," referring to the 14th Amendment, "does, however, deny the states the power to legislate that different treatment be accorded to persons placed by a statute into different classes on the basis of criteria wholly unrelated to the object of that statute. A classification must be reasonable, not arbitrary, and must rest upon some ground of difference having a fair and substantial relation to the object of the legislation, so that all persons similarly circumstanced shall be treated alike." What that means is the state of Alaska, under our Constitution, does not have the authority to deny the protection of the law to a single class of individuals, such as our preborn children. However, the Constitution and current statutes in Alaska grant full protection of the law to all children right now, except for those that are going to be or are aborted. According to Reed versus Reed, this exception is a violation of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. Recently in Roe versus Wade, Justice Potter Stewart asked the pro-abortion attorney Sarah Weddington this question. If it were established that an unborn fetus is a person within the protection of the 14th Amendment, you would have an almost impossible case here, would you not? Mrs. Weddington replied, "I would have a very difficult case." In that opinion, Justice Blanche Munn then wrote in the majority decision, "If this suggestion of personhood is established, the appellant's case, of course, collapses, for the fetus's right to life will then be guaranteed by the 14th Amendment." Justice Samuel Alito declared in the Supreme Court majority opinion in Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health Organization, given recently, that the conclusions of Roe versus Wade were egregiously wrong from the start. "Our Declaration of Independence said we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Throughout the years, various court cases have set precedents that the word "men" in that document includes all people, people of color, people of other races and nationalities, as well as both genders. It's time we define life and purposes and persons, for the purpose of our Constitution. It is time to follow the science, to open our eyes and hearts and recognize the personhood of the preborn. It is time to fix our statutes. This bill does that.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. So there has been an objection on committee substitute for House Bill 107. Would the secretary please call the roll?
Representative Ballard.
Yes. Yes. I'm supported. Sorry.
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Sumner.
Yes.
Representative Gray.
No.
Representative Rowe.
No.
Yes.
5 yeas, 2 nays.
With a vote of 5 yeas and 2 nays, committee substitute for House Bill 107 has been adopted and is our new working document. So I will now set an amendment deadline for this bill to be Friday, March 22nd, 5 p.m. to my office. That way it gives us at least another day after today's floor session and our amazing legislative legal staff at least a good night's sleep before they begin amendments. Thank you, Representative McCabe and staff, for presentation on that committee substitute. That concludes our business for today. The House Judiciary Committee will meet again on Friday, March 22nd at 1 p.m. to bring back House Bill 358, Prohibit AI-Altered Representations by Representative Krog, and then potentially 107. We're going to also consider the governor's appointee to the State Commission for Human Rights. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect it is 2:20 p.m.